Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is Laura Gottfried. Gottfried is the principal of the Elizabeth Ann Clune Montessori School of Ithaca. She began her Montessori career as a primary teacher and earned her certification in 1995 from the CMTE at the College of New Rochelle. She taught at primary level for 7 years and then junior level for 3. She also served as the Montessori Learning Support Specialist for 7 years, working with students experiencing challenges in the school setting. She has extensive experience in the field of learning disabilities. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I want you to tell me, because I'm always interested, how you got interested in education and how you finally found the Montessori philosophy.
Well, actually, I was never interested in education. I have a degree in philosophy. And when I graduated from university, I returned to Ithaca, which was where I was from, and did some other things. And as a part of those other things, I made a connection with Andrea Riddle, and she was a peer. And it was fascinating to me that this person who was a peer, I mean, I was in my 20s, was the principal of school. And she encouraged me to come and check it out, and I did. And that's how I found my way to wanting to be an educator.
Wow, that's mm-hmm. So you hadn't thought of it before.
Never.
Let's talk about the first Montessori school. It was founded in 1907 by Maria Montessori in Rome. To tell us about it, I know her philosophy continues all through these decades and 2 centuries. Tell us.
So she was a physician and a trained scientist, and she was asked to basically run a home for orphan and underserved children. And what transpired over the course of that was that children were doing things with the stuff that just happened to be around that was amazing to her. And so she gradually developed materials that allowed children to teach themselves. And that was the beginning.
So you know, you use the word organic and so on your website. So that was where that philosophy came from, right?
Yes.
Instead of top-down, teachers lecturing.
Right. Everything in a Montessori school is set up by the teacher based on the developmental stage of the children that are served by that specific environment. So each developmental stage will have a different-looking classroom with different materials, and not only the physical stuff will be different, but the interaction between the adults and the children will be different. Their relationship to their schoolwork will be different. It's all dependent on who we see children being at each developmental stage.
God, I love that. I love this whole philosophy. Now, let's talk a little bit about the local school. It was founded in 1979. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit who founded it, why it was founded.
So in 1979, the school was founded by Andrea Riddle and Carol Hill. The story goes that Andrea and Carol were both Montessorians already, and Carol had a child who was becoming elementary age, and she wanted to start a school to continue her child working in the Montessori paradigm. Ah. So they began a school. Its first home was in the T.G. Miller building, which is now where CSMA is, and they had 9 students.
Wow.
And that's how it started.
Yeah, just a parent caring about her kid's education and deciding to take the reins herself. I love that kind of initiative. Now, in 1998, it was renamed the Elizabeth Ann Clune Montessori School. Tell us about Elizabeth.
So Elizabeth was Andrea's student when she was 3 years old. And Elizabeth is a person with Down syndrome. Her parents decided that she should have a Montessori education, even though they really didn't know what they were doing. And Andrea, at that time, was a relatively new teacher. And the brilliance of Andrea was that she looked at everything slightly askew from what one would normally approach things. So this child presented herself, and instead of doing research to find out what the method was to educate children with Down syndrome, Andrea just let it happen. And the relationship between these two was so intense. Andrea really felt like it was Elizabeth who was her teacher instead of vice versa.
Oh, yeah.
What transpired over the course of the next roughly, I'm not sure how many years, but at least 10 years was the relationship between Andrea, Elizabeth, and Bob and Joanne Clune, who are her parents, was really symbiotic in that the Clunes were able to help Andrea and Carol really make their organization, their school organization, solid legally and systemically, while Andrea allowed Elizabeth to become really an accomplished person in her own right.
See, that amazes me, because so many people think people with Down syndrome are sort of like lost souls. And it sounds like, you know, Andrea really tapped into the fact that everybody has a gift.
Totally. And she would say that Elizabeth was her teacher. And actually that relationship, you know, from the very beginning, the school approached children with differing abilities in a way that was really unusual at that time. And this was when there wasn't inclusion. The model has been that all kinds of people are best served in community together, and that is not solely for the benefit of the less able. That by being in relationship and observing how things work for different kinds of people benefits everybody. So we have continued to really have that be a basic part of our school.
Yeah, I saw that on your website, that regardless of disability or ability, it's you know, tame to accommodate everybody. Now, Montessori's approach to education is called holistic. So tell us how that translates to the kids. I mean, the kids, even the ones without disabilities.
So what that means is that it is not just the academic rigor that we care about. It is not just how accomplished a child becomes in certain skills. We care about the whole child. And that means that the social and emotional is important, the artistic, the academic, the musical, the physical, and that no one of those things should supersede the other.
It almost sounds like the old-fashioned version of a GP. Remember when we used to have a doctor taking care of everything? Now everybody's a specialist.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good analogy.
So it's almost like you guys have stayed in the old-fashioned times.
Yeah.
How have you dealt with this incessant testing that's happening in our culture right now?
Well, because we're a private school, we do not have to abide by those rules or those, whatever they are,
they are rules. So they're standards that
standards,
have been set.
Right. So what we do is we pay careful attention to what's going on out there in the world, because our students definitely transition mostly into the public system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But our way of assessment is built into all of the work we do on a day-to-day basis with children. However, we have felt for a long time, even before the testing in the public schools got to be to the limit it is, or to the extent that it is now, that testing was a way of our society, and that we wanted to prepare our children to be able to do that. So before school's out every year, we take 2 to 3 weeks where we spend a couple of hours a day first teaching them how to take the test, and then they actually take a test. And we do this to give them the practical life experience of filling in the bubbles and turning the pages of the test and knowing how to, you know, how to physically maneuver themselves through a test.
Yeah.
And we don't do that for the results of the test. As a matter of fact, we don't necessarily even share the results of the test.
That's quite amazing to me, because the kids do, like you said, need to know how to do that. But it's so nice to know that there are schools out there who haven't turned it, the whole education experience, into a test score. You know what I mean? Now, it is interesting to me that you have a rigorous curriculum for academics, but you also address the spiritual. Tell me how that manifests in this culture where everybody's kind of, you know, a little bit touchy about religion or thinking that spirituality is religion.
Well, I would not say that at our school we are spiritual in that sense. There was a strong tradition of religious, a lot of nuns became Montessori teachers at one point, so there was that tradition, but what we really adhere to is the whole sense that human beings are part of the universe. And our sense of the wonder and magic and really inherent magic of that is our spirituality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so but it's going back to that word holistic. You're worried about the whole human being, and we are spiritual beings, as I assume what you mean. You don't try to ignore it.
Well, what we're really trying to do is give the child a real sense of their place in the big picture and in terms of how insignificant they are and we are on the one hand, and also at the same time, how incredibly impactful we can be on the other hand. So we are very science-based. We do, you know, everything is integrated. So the whole concept of evolution and all of that is really about making the child or giving the child the ability to see themselves as a part of this really magnificent thing.
Yeah, and part of the big picture.
Not just the
main course, right?
Yeah. That's right.
How involved are parents in this whole paradigm of Montessori philosophy?
Well, there are all kinds of Montessori schools, some of which are parent cooperatives. We are not a parent cooperative, and that is because we really want to be traditionally Montessori. And that's hard to do if parents are having say in curriculum when they are not Montessori trained. However, we have a board and we have parents on our board. And the school actually has been very affected by the contributions of parents, first of all, because most of our teachers come to the school first as parents. And because over the years, we have had really contributing, creative, dedicated board members who were parents who we wouldn't be where we are without them. But in terms of day-to-day in the classroom, it's not, they are not a part of what we do. Parents contribute in terms of their area of expertise, and we love, you know, having parents share their things, their passions. But we are really curriculum-driven.
Yeah. No, that makes sense to me. I mean, you could have way too many voices and totally lose the point if you had too many people involved. I'm so glad that Montessori is one of the schools early on that got away from that Henry Ford assembly line educational paradigm that we still see. You know, we still see that.
That's
that
true.
The factory cookie cutter.
That's true.
Everybody has to sit in this classroom and do the same
thing. That's true.
Yeah. So I find that really quite amazing that we're able to do that. I think it's wonderful that you have kids keep journals, too. Tell me what that means.
At different levels, and I'm talking about levels as being developmental levels, so the 3 to 6-year-old is one level, the 6 to 9-year-old is one level, the 9 to 12-year-old is another, and the 12 to 14, 15-year-olds. And those ages are fluid, so it's really an approximation.
And you look at the individual, right, to see
where we look at the individual.
So
we have children with the same birthdays in different levels, depending on how they present themselves. The way children are responsible for and organize themselves with their work is through journals. And at different levels, that means different things. So in the lower elementary level, that would mean a folder where they're keeping track of the lessons they've been given and the assignments that they have to do over the course of the week. And then from that journal or that folder, they choose what they want to do when.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Laura Gottfried. She is the principal of the Elizabeth Ann Kloon Montessori School of Ithaca. I want to continue on that line because this is such a world where everybody's on electrical devices, everybody's on phones, computers. So keeping a journal sounded to me like an old-fashioned way for kids to be in touch with their inner selves.
We are very carefully going into the world, the digital world. And that doesn't mean that we don't have media literacy, because we do, but we are really approaching the integration of digital media through the media literacy angle. So we want kids to be in touch with themselves. We want kids to learn how to do things when it makes sense, the old-fashioned way. I mean, Montessori is really about preparing the children for the life they are actually going to live.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like exactly what the philosophy is. Now, I know there's a lot of friction in this culture about LGBT issues, trans kids. Have you guys had to deal with that in the schools? And how's it gone?
Well, and actually, it's so timely that you're asking me this. We have not really spent much time. We have known that we need to be looking at this in a big way. And we have just begun to do that. Mm. And what was really interesting, and it's really, we're still figuring out how to recover from it, is we have a new facility. And when this is our third year in the new facility, so 2 years ago, when the construction process was happening, we wanted to make gender-neutral bathrooms. Mm. And we were not allowed by code to do that. We have to have those bathrooms with a girls and boys sign. And not only that, we could not find any signs that didn't have pictures that were totally gender stereotyped.
Oh, yeah, skirts and pants, yeah.
We want to address this issue, and the way, you know, so that's like a systemic sort of thing. The way we work with any issue where it's disrespect in any way is the same. So if there was teasing, if there was excluding,
bullying, yeah.
any of mm-hmm. that, it doesn't matter if it's because you look like a girl, but you're saying you want to be a boy. It doesn't matter if you have black skin or white skin. All of the things boil down to, is it respectful or not?
I see. Yeah, I'm actually surprised you haven't had to deal with that more. Who are you governed by? You say you're not governed by the state, so you don't have to do the testing. Who told you had to have, you know, gender bathrooms?
Well, that's
gender.
Building code.
Oh, so it's just building code.
We couldn't get a certificate of occupancy
in
order to have our students in the building without that.
So it's the building code.
It's the building code. And I do know that there is a state, and I don't, at least one, where that has been overturned, that regulation. I don't remember which one, and I sort of don't believe it's New York State, but mm-hmm. that could be wrong.
You know, when I was younger, I worked as a poet in the school, and I worked in the LGBT community, and we were invited into the school to talk about our lives. I was wondering if Montessori has ever done that or thought about doing that. Have people who are really living the life or doing, you know, like poets in the schools, have you done that?
We have not done that. However, we have, in our community and in our faculty, we have lots of variations of every, you know, permutation of gender and sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. So that's a part of just the reality.
It's just incorporated into the everyday.
Right. And we do, you know, with our younger students, we do work on families and what does a family mean? And that's, again, the same, mm-hmm. you know, every permutation. And we have a middle school. So gender issues come up in terms of health, in terms of social justice. You can't be a member of society in this current day and age uh-huh. and not be aware that this is a hotbed.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and diversity is important. That's, you know, that was another philosophy of Maria Montessori, is to get people together, right? Which is what I want to talk about, the peace.
Yes.
You call Montessori a peace school. Tell
us
what that means.
The real purpose of a Montessori school is social reform. Her whole pedagogy was built upon the premise that if human beings are so gifted and innovative that we can develop airplanes and weapons and all kinds of things for warfare, then that same intellect, if put to a different turn, should be able to develop peace. And she felt that that should begin with the child. Mm. And if children were allowed to be their most authentic selves at the same time as working together in a community, that was the way to get there. So we are incredibly community focused, first in the classroom, then in the school. And you will not see when you come in, that classrooms are quiet and children aren't talking to each other. Mm. It's all about how to be social, how to work to maximize your strength and find other people to help you bypass your weaknesses and collaborate and be a citizen.
So you are actually teaching kids how to get along, right? I mean, how to interact.
Absolutely.
And collaborate, it's, as you say.
When there is a conflict, the entire classroom will stop.
Mm.
So nothing is more important to us than the relationships between the student and the teacher and the students themselves and the relationship to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And how do you encourage the kids, especially the older ones, to get into the community? Do you have programs that take them out into the community and
into the community at large?
Yeah, and to work or
they
volunteer.
The oldest, well, in the 9 to 12 year old range, they do community service. They were going to Loaves and Fishes, but there's been an issue with that, and we can't do that anymore, and we haven't figured out what we're going to do instead.
Mm.
And our middle school does a lot of going out into the world, and they do things like help maintain trails at the plantations. They do fundraisers where they have a coffee shop that they run and produce everything for.
Wow.
And take that money and they adopt a family from the Advocacy Center every Christmas and, you know, provide gifts for kids who wouldn't necessarily be able to have them.
Wow.
And they're out, I would say, roughly once a month in some form or another.
So that's encouraged by the school. Is it set
Absolutely.
Up by the school, too? A kid says, I want to go, you know, work at the children's garden.
We have a curriculum that leads them through.
So you're actually training kids to have a conscience, too, it sounds
Absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
That's part of it.
It's who they are in the world that is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and that I'm sure some of that stems from Maria Montessori starting the school and then having problems in the 30s or whenever it was, when the rise of fascism in Italy.
Her whole being was riveted and, you know, decimated by what she saw as the destruction from war. And yes, she was a peacemaker. First and foremost, she was a peacemaker.
And does the Montessori student body get involved in things like peace marches against wars?
As they get older.
Yeah, because I was going to say the parents must know what they're signing their kids up for.
Yes.
So there can't be that much controversy. I was also interested in the fact that you're very interested in nutrition and making sure kids have good diets. On your website, you say you have a peanut-free establishment.
That is not so much about nutrition as that we have children who have allergies.
Yeah,
so
that was a separate thing. But you also talk about nutrition. You give examples of nutritional food that
we
you think the parents should.
We care about all of that because it does have an effect. So, you know, we do our best to guide and...
Yeah, I mean, nutrition is obviously very important for kids, and some of the schools at large haven't done a very good job with that, if you ask me. Now, how do you keep it peanut-free? How do you police that? I'm just wondering how you make sure that carries on.
Well, we have 236 students.
Yeah.
And that is not a huge school. And all of those students eat lunch in their classrooms with their teachers, and their parents all know. And if for some reason there was peanuts, it would be just by mistake.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it is the kind of community where if people are unhappy with something, they will come forward. They won't try to sneak around the back way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of the things that we're able to accomplish are because we're self-selecting
too.
In a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that doesn't mean it's not hard for families because children really like peanut butter, but you can have sun butter and, you know, there's ways to get around it.
Yeah. I was just wondering how you police that. A peace curriculum is not going to be policing things.
Yeah, we don't need to police
that.
We really don't. We educate and then we go from there.
Yeah. To tell us what it's been like for you to go from being a teacher to being a principal. What's your day-to-day, you know, life like as a principal instead of a teacher?
Well, it's completely different. But the beauty of that school is that the strength of the staff is so strong. I mean, we have 25 full-time staff. We have 25 part-time staff. Most of the people have been there many years. These are people that I've worked with in many different ways for a long, long time, and it is truly a collective. So I do not have the same kind of relationship with children that a teacher does.
Oh, yeah.
So that is a shift, but it's really, I feel like it's such a great honor and privilege to sort of hold the vision and keep us moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what kind of changes have you made? Have you done any innovative things that only you have brought to the school?
Well, I've always been somebody who didn't like the status quo.
Mm.
And I love to learn new things. And I'm a huge reader, and I love to go to conferences. So a lot of things that have sort of been brought in over the years have been because of my interests in various things. And, you know, the media literacy piece absolutely was generated by my feeling that even though we're a Montessori school, we really need to make sure that we're remaining relevant to what's going to be the reality for these children.
And is the reality for these children, right? Has there been a resistance in the Montessori philosophy against...
In Montessori, there are vehement camps in every direction on every subject. So, yes, of course.
I'm sure there were. I still use pen and paper. Do you encourage that still?
We all children learn to read and write with pen and paper and with paper-based text. Absolutely.
Oh, good. We don't want to lose the art of using our hands and our minds together.
Well, and there is this, you know, there is a question about whether learning to read on a screen is really as strong of a learning as with text.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That'll probably be something that'll be debated for a while. Well, we're almost out of time, Laura. Tell us about any things that are coming up and give us some contact information, any events that people can participate in later in the fall.
We always have, starting in mid-October, people can come. Anybody can come if you have an interest as a teacher or just because you're interested in the philosophy or whatever. We have people observe in classrooms on Thursday mornings. You just have to call our office and we set that up. We have a great all community-wide festival coming up in March that is called the Family Fun Fest, and we rent out the Hangar Theater, and we have an interactive movie experience that's really fun. And those are the big community things that will be coming up.
Uh-huh. And also contact information for
people. www.eacmsi.org.
Great. Well, Laura Gottfried, thank you so much for joining us. Again, I've been talking to Laura Gottfried. She is the principal of the Elizabeth Ann Clune Montessori School of Ithaca. Thank you so much, and good luck in the future. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.